You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
It is Monday, June 27th, and we're talking Cardinals baseball today with our Cardinals reporter, Jennifer Langosch. Jennifer, thank you for joining us. As always, and Jen, as of this discussion, the Cardinals are 9 games back of the Cubs atop the NL Central. That's still a very tall mountain to climb, but, you know, on the bright side, that deficit at one time was 12.5, as that huge sweep of the Cubs at Wrigley, a big reason why they've shaved into that deficit. But in your estimation, you know, as I said, 9 games, that's a long way to go. What does that number have to be to give the Cardinals, or maybe the Cardinal fan base, you know, a legitimate, realistic expectation that, you know what, we can catch these guys as runaway as the Cubs have been all year? What do you think that number kind of has to be?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look now, you know, we're 2 weeks out from the All-Star break. I think if this team is able to maybe shave that to about 6 or 7 games, still a very formidable team up there in Chicago. But then, you know, if you enter the second half, maybe to the point where 6, 7 games out, I think that gives you some hope. I mean, I think for the Cardinals, a little bit disappointing in the fact that the Cubs right now, I mean, they're going through their struggles. The worst struggles they've had this year. I mean, they're 9-11 in their last 20. They've lost 6 out of 7. And yes, the Cardinals have gained a little bit of ground, but I think this team expected to hopefully gain a little bit more and has maybe missed an opportunity to do so by kind of going up and down itself. So, yeah, if you can shave maybe another 2-3 games off there by the All-Star break, it gets interesting. There's 3 more series set up between the Cubs and Cardinals this year, so there's going to be head-to-head opportunities there that await this team. You know, but certainly also you think you have to start looking at the wild card race, and there's a lot of teams right there that the Cardinals also need to keep an eye on, some of whom have leapfrogged them in recent days as well. And so that's up to be a terrific second half, certainly. And if the Cardinals can finish this first half strong, I think that sets them up even better.
And Jennifer, as you alluded to, you know, they have shaved off 3.5 games. It could have been more. We could be standing here talking about an 8-game deficit, if not for a terrible meltdown on Friday night, which cost Trevor Rosenthal his job as the Cardinals closer. The Cardinals that night take a 3-1 lead into the bottom of the ninth in Seattle, and Rosenthal gives up the walk-off shot to Adam Lind. Just a gut-wrenching loss for the Cardinals. So like I said, it could have been 8 games we're talking about right now. That's not the case. Something we kind of discussed last week and something we saw coming, that, you know, one more poor outing by Rosenthal, it did cost him his job. So the question obviously now becomes, who inherits that role? Is it going to be, you know, the dreaded closer by committee, which in theory sounds good, in practice never quite works out? Or, you know, is it going to be one guy that really inherits that role and locks it down for the rest of 2016?
You know, right now, Mike Matheny has refrained from naming a new closer, instead saying that Son Juanjo, Jonathan Broxton, and Kevin Seagrass will all get opportunities, or at least get, you know, looked at for those spots. But I think Matheny kind of telegraphed yesterday what his initial plans are going to be, and that's for Son Juanjo to get an opportunity. And I'm not sure that anybody can argue with that. This is a guy who 357 career saves in between Korea and Japan in his career over there, a very decorated closer, still the all-time save leader in Korean baseball history. And then you look at what he's done here in 2.5, almost 3 months so far in his major league career. He's been as good as anybody on this staff, certainly, and one of the best relievers in the game. So I think he's going to get the majority of opportunities first. I do think we'll see Kevin Seagrass maybe from time to time get some save opportunities based on matchups. I mean, with him being a lefty pitcher, if the matchups dictate that maybe he's a better matchup than Son Juanjo, I wouldn't be surprised to see the Cardinals go that way. But I would expect O to get the load of opportunities, and then certainly it'll be interesting to see where they can fit in Trevor Rosenthal to try to get his confidence back up. I mean, not only does Trevor need command, but I think just in talking to him Friday night, you could see that this is a guy who has really lost some confidence in his ability to be a dominant late-inning reliever. So getting that back in some way will help the Cardinals, and then maybe he can, you know, whether he eases back into that closer's role or not, I think is still kind of unknown, but he could at least be a late-inning arm for this team again.
And Jennifer, correct me if I'm wrong, O's nickname overseas for many years, was it the final boss? Is that right?
It was the final boss. So he loves that nickname. It's funny because he still jokes that that's his nickname here, but he could actually be the final boss here in the next couple of days for the first time.
Absolutely. I mean, what a great nickname. You know, baseball's full of great nicknames. That's one of the better ones. So hopefully he can really lock down that nickname and play into that role if he does indeed inherit the closer's job for the St. Louis Cardinals team. And, Jennifer, you brought up a good point. You know, the easy point is to say, well, Rosenthal is underperforming. he can't close anymore. That's step one. Step two is always the hard part. It's, okay, what do we do with the guy? Is it going to be a matter of, you know, we put him in the middle to late innings and let him find his way back, and no matter, you know, let's say he succeeds and he thrives and he finds his way again, are they going to let him kind of re-audition for that closer's role, or do they say, you know what, no matter how well you perform, if you perform well, you're going to be a middle relief guy for the rest of the year no matter what? What direction do you think the Cardinals go here?
Yeah, I mean, that's still a little fuzzy, but I will say I asked Mike Matheny about that, I guess it was Saturday, the day that the team made the announcement that they were making a change. You know, it was my question to Mike was, you know, in your messaging and your, you know, delivery of this to Trevor, was there a part of the message that, you know, you can earn this job back? And, you know, Mike Matheny was very candid in saying, I don't want to tell players something that might not be true. And his point was, if someone like Sohn Wan Oh or even a Kevin Seagrass or Jonathan Broxton were to start getting those same opportunities and were to dominate, were to take off, then that job could become theirs no matter what Trevor Rosenthal does again. Now, do I think Trevor Rosenthal is going to be a middle reliever the rest of the season? No, I think he's better than that. I mean, this is a guy the last 2 years who has led the majors in saves and been very dominant along the way. So I think what he's going to be looking to do, again, is get his confidence and command back, really has to address that walk rate, which has just been escalating all season. But then, you know, even if he isn't able to inherit maybe the ninth inning rollback, I think he can become an asset in the seventh or eighth inning, because that's the other part of this equation. By taking Sohn Wan Oh or whoever it may be out of their role and putting them in the ninth inning, the Cardinals leave themselves a little more vulnerable in trying to bridge that gap from the starter to the closer. So do you think Trevor could play a role there? It'll be interesting to see how they deploy him right now. And again, got to find an opportunity for him to start feeling good about himself again soon.
And Jennifer, as you touched on, I think the kind of the dirty little secret of Trevor Rosenthal the past 2 years has been, you know what, he's had gaudy save numbers and gaudy strikeout numbers, but as you said, the walk rate has been really concerning. And it hasn't just been this season, hasn't just been last season. You said this really goes back to 2014. So in a way, could Cardinals officials kind of see this coming? Was there some internal concern that at some point that's going to catch up with him, and you know, what has happened? Could they kind of see it coming in a way like a year or two ago?
Yeah, I think so. The other thing that's been a concern for him for the last few years as well is the percentage of first batters that have reached against him. I mean, 2 years ago, I believe the percentage was 37-38% of the first batters he faced reached. Remember, this is a guy who is typically pitching with a 1-2 or 3-run lead. You just can't be putting base runners on. So between the walk rate and how many of those first batters were reaching, I do think the Cardinals were concerned. And I think then we saw that manifest itself in two ways. One was the way in which the team built its bullpen over the winter. They went out and got Sohn Wan Oh, who had closing experience. They re-signed Jonathan Broxton, and they felt like they needed to fortify those late innings in case there was a need there. Secondly, I think a lot of us thought that maybe Trevor Rosenthal would be kind of the next guy in line for a long-term extension. That's really how this organization works with a lot of its young players, that when they hit arbitration, they try to sign them for multiple years. They have some cost certainty there. Trevor hit arbitration this year, and the Cardinals did not have any discussions with he or his agent about a long-term deal. So, you know, to me, that was kind of a little bit of a warning sign that maybe they weren't necessarily convinced that he'd be as dominant as he's been the last few years. And I think you just look at that role in general in baseball, and it's a very volatile role, and it's very rare to see closers year after year after year dominate in the way that Trevor did in terms of those save numbers the last 2 years. So for whatever reason, it seems to be one of those roles where it's hard to repeat, and I think we're seeing a little bit of that from Trevor this year.
Yeah, Mariano Rivera's don't grow on trees, as the Cardinals are now finding out, as well as the other, you know, 29 teams in baseball. Certainly a very volatile position with a lot of high turnover. It'll be very interesting to see what the Cardinals do when they have their first 1 or 2 run lead in the ninth inning. Maybe that occurs tonight. We'll certainly see what decision Mike Matheny makes. Jennifer, I want to switch gears a little bit. Kind of get your thoughts on the Colton Wong and the outfield experiment. It's still rather in its infancy, but we now have a 7-game sample size, including the last 2 games, rather surprisingly, in left field. Not a single error for Wong in the 7 games so far, but as we all know, that doesn't begin to tell the story about, you know, how effective a guy is as a defensive outfielder. So in your assessments, your observations of him, you know, kind of judge how he's reading the ball off the bat, the routes he's taking, his instincts and so forth, and kind of how you think this whole thing is going in general.
Yeah, I mean, it's still a work in progress. I was off the previous week, so I did not see his games in center field at Wrigley Field, though, and talking to people who did, it sounded like there was a little bit of vulnerability there for him just in trying to read balls. And I think he had one play in particular that he didn't like, play right off the wall. I will say, though, seeing him in left field at Safeco Field, he actually played it quite well. I mean, he wasn't really challenged in any unique ways, but he did at one point utilize his speed and his arm strength to be able to turn what probably would have been a double for most guys into a single. And I think that's where, you know, Colton's kind of talent can play out. He does have a very strong arm. That's going to be a dangerous thing. And it's interesting that the Cardinals, Mike Matheny and Colton Wong, both said that Colton's actually more comfortable in left field than he is in center. And I think a lot of that just has to do with that center field position is one where the player is usually the quarterback of the outfield. And when you're talking about a player who hasn't played the outfield since he was a freshman in high school, that's a pretty tall order to throw somebody into. Now, of course, it's very easy for Colton Wong to play left field here right now when the Cardinals are playing in American League Park. But when they go home on Wednesday and they have a left fielder by the name of Matt Holliday, who's on pace for 31 homers and 98 RBIs, those opportunities aren't going to be there for Colton. So I think we're going to see him still slide over into center. He's getting a lot of work there pregame, both in both positions. So it's amazing. I mean, I was certainly never envisioned, 3 months into the season that we would see second baseman Colton Wong becoming an outfielder. But he is athletic enough, he is quick enough, and I think he has the arm strength be able to take to the position pretty competently.
And I think it's pretty clear at this point that Aledmys Diaz is not going anywhere, because I believe he had three of the Cardinals franchise record tying 13 extra base hits in the win over the Mariners Sunday. Is that correct?
That's correct. And Matt Carpenter, who's playing second base, isn't going anywhere either. You look at his month, he has had an incredible month of June since his baby girl was born. I don't know if there's a coincidence there, but it's reached safely in 18 straight games, hit safely in 17 of 18, hitting .400 over that time. So, yeah, you look at the two middle infield spots on this Cardinals team, those are solidified. So for Colton Wong to continue to get playing time, it's going to be in the outfield. And I will say, on the offensive end, I think it was very encouraging the at-bats he took this weekend. I mean, that was the reason he went down to begin with, was the offense just wasn't there. But he seems to have come up a little bit better plate discipline, doesn't seem to be shooting for 400-foot home runs every time he takes a swing, and that seems to be paying off for him as well.
Absolutely is. And as you said, the bats awakened yesterday as the Cardinals avoided the sweep in Seattle, banging out 13 extra base hits to tie the franchise record, and the Cardinals romping on Sunday over Seattle. That leads us to Monday, Jennifer, and it's the I-70 series between the Cardinals and the Royals, which begins tonight. Two games in KC, the next two in St. Louis. And, you know, Jennifer, here from our perch in New York, it's always a big deal when the Yankees play the Mets. In Chicago, it's a big deal when the Cubs play the White Sox. And I'm sure it's a big deal in Missouri when the Cardinals and the Royals lock horns. But the one thing I wonder is that, you know, again, here in New York, you know, Mets and Yankees is always intense. Does that same sort of intensity exist between the Cardinals and the Royals, or is that really not considered as much of a rivalry as maybe some of the other in-state showdowns between, as I said, the Yankees and Mets or the Cubs and the White Sox?
You know, I think from the fan perspective, it's always been a pretty fun rivalry here. I mean, there's always a lot of Cardinal fans that come over to Kansas City, a lot of Royals fans that come over to St. Louis. I think when it comes to the on-the-field product, I mean, with the Royals, with where they were for so many years, just not as competitive as the Cardinals. It was a little more lopsided on the field, and now, you know, that's changed. I mean, the Cardinals come in here to play the defending World Series champions, who ironically right now have the same record as the St. Louis Cardinals. So, you know, I think that's enhanced this rivalry, certainly. But I think if you ask fans here, it's a big deal, and you will see a ton of red in the seats the next two nights, and then we will see a lot of blue in St. Louis. And in these last couple of years with the Royals being better, we've seen even more Royals fans travel over to St. Louis. So it's a fun series, one that happens every year, the 2-2 home and road games for this team. And again, you're two teams here who same record at this point into the season, neither of whom have lived up to expectations, but who certainly hope to turn things around in the second half.
Yeah, that's a good point. For all the success that the Royals and Cardinals have had in recent years, the Royals in particular, defending World Series champions, neither team guaranteed a spot in October, at least not yet. So these four games of the most paramount importance, we'll see how they play out beginning tonight, this Monday night, with the first of two games in Kansas City. Jennifer Langosh, a pleasure as always. We'll do it again at this time next week for sure. In the meantime, Matt Wehmeyer signing off for MLB.com Extras, St. Louis Cardinals.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go. Every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.